This is Kate from Rusty Bell. You're listening to Valley Free Radio 103.3 FM, WXOJLP, Northampton.
When you get home at night and switch on the lights, do you feel good about the source of your electricity? Did you know that you can choose to power your home with 100% local, clean electricity? It's easy. Sign up for New England Wind or New England Green Start without any contracts or commitments. Just go to www.massenergy.org/CET. You have the power to say no to the standard mix of polluters like natural gas, coal, and oil. Make the switch to clean electricity produced right here in New England. Nonprofit organizations, the Center for Eco-Technology and Mass Energy Consumers Alliance, have partnered to bring you this effective way to support local, green jobs and make Massachusetts a cleaner, better place to live and work. Show your support for local clean energy by signing up today at www.massenergy.org/CET.
You've tuned in to Out There on Valley Free Radio for the next hour from 4 to 5. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring, and I'll be playing some clips and things. Wait, I have one more short PSA.
I'm Rachel Maddow with the Pioneer Valley Planning Commission and the Franklin Regional Council of Governments for Valley Free Radio, reminding you that legally, bicycles are vehicles, and bicyclists have the same rights and responsibilities and should observe the same rules as motorists. For more information on bicycle rights and safety, go to www.massbike.org.
Yeah, I just wanted to play that one in the heart of winter. I have a few clips of people who have been out biking in the last couple days that I'll play. So the main part of today's show will be an interview with Jerry Johnson. He lives in Northampton with his wife and family. He's part of the band Sylvia Johnson and Higher Help. And I just interviewed him about just about his life. So it's been a really snowy week here, and some of my coworkers have been working hard, peddling trash and recycling and compost and things in the snow. So I caught a couple of them at the transfer center yesterday. This is Amanda and Dwayne. Can I ask you all how it is riding through the snow today?
Well, it's a little difficult that the bike path isn't shoveled.
Or plowed, yeah.
Plowed. That adds a lot of time.
Oh, I should just say that that was earlier in the morning, but the bike path, the rail trail, was plowed very shortly after, thanks to the DPW for that.
Yeah, but it helps to have studded tires.
This is your first winter doing pedal, people, in the reflections. I'm really tired right now, are you?
I'm definitely pretty tired.
All right, that's reflection enough. That was Amanda Ziff. How is it riding on the side streets for you today, Dwayne?
The main streets, side streets, they all are kind of... You're getting better now, but this morning they were all just like that dry, slushy stuff that spin out. And...
It's kind of like riding onto a wedge, like you're two of your wheels, two of the trailer wheels, all four wheels are like constantly have to ride up an incline and crush it as you go through.
It was just... I made it. I couldn't.
You couldn't make it up?
No. My tire's just spinning.
You couldn't make it up Route 9 by Smith College?
Nope.
Yeah, so what did you do?
I backed my trailer safely down. I made it. I didn't even make it to the Virgin Mary. As soon as I got on, just started going up the hill, started sliding and going sideways, and my tires were spinning, and I was like, oh, this is not good. So I ended up going down State Street and then up Prospect Street.
Oh, Finn to Prospect.
Yeah. And that was... not the greatest, but...
Yeah, this Prospect was easier, more passable, it seemed like to me, and there's a little less traffic than Route 9.
Yeah, because the traffic just gets all that granular snow that's been salted and hasn't frozen yet, so it's just like,
yeah,
just like sand.
Yeah.
I mean, just
like a ride on the beach.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, I would just want to give some credit to all the people that have been plowing the snow, because it's a lot of stuff to work with. I know my shoulders are sore from shoveling and wobbling and things like that. Oh, another thing that makes riding with a bike and trailer difficult in the snow is the way that the snow slush packed stuff, it packs up between the trailer wheels and the fenders, and so it's like you always have brakes dragging in certain conditions. Okay, so the next little clip is with Colby. She and I were out together doing downtown trash yesterday. Downtown trash is a contract that Pedal People has with the city to empty all the public trash and recycling barrels downtown 7 days a week. Though I have to say, we did not do it on Monday during the blizzard. All right, Colby, are you ready to talk about some of the joys and challenges of trash in winter?
I don't know. Might be a bit of a downer if you record me right now.
Well, okay, I'll start with what frustrates me.
Great.
Emptying downtown trash barrels after a snowstorm.
Oh, me too.
But, no, that's a specific question. What is it about that makes it difficult working after a snowstorm?
Oh.
First, yeah, the biking is just a little part of it for me.
Yeah, the biking is the least of my worries. It's the mixture of trash and a lot of snow in each barrel.
So, like, I can't pull a bag out because it's so heavy with the snow. So I have to pick the snow out first. And then I have to pick the snow out, and the little bags of dog turds coming out with it, and who knows what.
Yeah, you have to pick the dog turds out of the snow before you can pick the snow out of the bag, before you can get the bag out of the barrel.
And then you gotta get the barrel out of the cage, which is often plowed in and snow blown in with a slushy stuff that's frozen, icy together.
Yep.
You got something to say?
Yeah, I just said it.
What do you like about this? About
I'm a little tired. A little wired. I started at 7 yesterday morning shoveling, but I didn't finish till 5 o'clock last night.
Wow.
And then I come back out this morning to touch things up. So.
Yeah, that's how it is.
Sorry, there's a lot of snow around your containers and stuff, but I got nowhere to put it.
I know, we're all...
I think of myself, man, they're going to be pissed at me.
It's how it is.
Got nowhere to put it. Can't throw it in the road. Then I get fined and it takes away from my air.
Huh. You get fined for throwing it in the road?
Yes.
What if you throw it on top of the berm, the pile, and it rolls down into the road?
That's what I try to do. I try to throw it on the top so it kind of fluffs over.
Yeah.
Not my problem.
Okay, Colby, how about the illegal dumping? I feel like I want to do a public service announcement for illegal dumping in downtown trash barrels. How does the illegal dumping affect you when you're trying to pull the bags and empty the trash?
It provides the same problem, but more of it.
Yeah, like I noticed what had happened this morning. One thing is, so it snowed all day yesterday and last night. Well, not last night. It stopped yesterday evening. And then last night, people came and threw their household trash on top of the snow. So then first they got to pluck out their household trash and then shovel out the snow and then get what's underneath. So, yeah. So if people could please not dump their household trash in downtown trash barrels, it would make our lives easier.
A lot easier.
And, it's pretty cold out. Was it like 5 degrees or something?
Sounds about right.
How's the scarf? What are the advantages of the scarf on your nose and mouth?
Well, it kind of warms up the air so I don't cough every time I breathe. That's good. One disadvantage is that my eyelashes are get condensation from my breath. So now I have icicles hanging off of my eyes.
It looks like your eyelashes are getting frozen to your scarf almost.
That's probably happening too.
And the
another benefit of my scarf is that I can mutter and grumble to myself as much as I want, as long as I keep the volume down and no one can tell.
All right, well, carry on. I think my recorder has frozen. It's not reading.
Oh.
That was Colby Singleton doing some trash emptying with me yesterday. Another thing about the downtown trash barrels, the way they sit between the street and the sidewalk, they're kind of the first line of defense when the plows come through and they plow the slush off of the road, and a lot of the barrels catch it. And sometimes they disappear altogether when we come out to empty them. And part of me is like, ooh, goodbye and good riddance. But then I guess I kind of feel like I should probably dig that thing out. It's probably my job. Anyway, so next up I have an interview or conversation with Jerry Johnson. Like I said before, Jerry and his family live in Northampton and are musicians, artists. Their families live in Northampton, extended families, many of them. Yeah, Jerry's just a really fun, creative spirit who I always like to see around town. So here's Jerry.
Hey,
hey, Jerry.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
How's everything? Come on in. How's everything? Long time no see. How was New Year's and everything? Would you like some tea or something?
How do we know each other?
Well, we met. You're a wonderful person. And we met on the bike trail.
That's what I thought. Just like from around town.
Yeah, I'm like, well, trail. I haven't seen you. And I think you're an exotic person. And you're like, you know, open to the world, uh-huh. You know. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I remember I was seeing you. I was biking up the path.
Yeah,
smiling.
So hello, smiling. Yeah, I love riding bikes. I love it. It's one of my things. I have two grandkids now.
Uh-huh.
And they are beautiful, and I love them so much, man. Never knew what love is. I do know what love is, but let me tell you, these little kids are something else. I was in this movie in New York. It's called Yonkers. I was a city councilman. I played the part of a city councilman. It's a really nice movie. I forgot the real name of it, but
I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about how you came to be here. Because, like, aren't you from Louisiana originally?
Yeah, well, I lived in Louisiana when I was a kid. I was 9 or 10 years old when I left there. I was had part racing in Louisiana, and then I came to New York. City, and I lived in a pretty decent neighborhood. It was a nice neighborhood. I lived about a block away from the Museum of Natural
Manhattan.
History.
I said Bermuda.
Yeah, Manhattan. Right. Okay. And when I came, you know, everything was just black. You know, everybody. And when I came to New York, I'm looking around at all these people. They're speaking different language. I suppose. What is that? What are they saying? It was a whole different shock to me.
Compared to Louisiana.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And with Louisiana was slow. New York City was fast. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I lived there in New York, and I used to be a shoe shine boy. So everybody would walk by and would say, good morning, good morning, good morning. So a guy said, are you from here? I said, no, I was from Louisiana. He said, oh, that's why. You say good morning to everybody. That's pretty nice, kid. Keep on doing it. He kept walking. And my mother said, Jerry, you can see a person today and you'll never see him again. Well, you know, that's how many people are in New York City. Uh-huh. And me shining shoes, I used to shine shoes and I talked to people. And, you know, kid, you know, people give me extra money. I lived in New York and then we moved uptown to Harlem. And then we stayed up in Harlem. We didn't move a lot. We stayed everywhere we ever stayed, 10 years, a long time. I don't like to move a lot. My mother never liked to do that anyway. But we lived in New York for a while, and somehow my older brother moved here. In a few years, and everybody was saying, you should go up there and visit. So me and Sylvia was talking about going somewhere where it's nature.
Because you and Sylvia met earlier.
Well, I met Sylvia in 1970-something, 74, 75. I was playing music on a block party, and I saw this woman, these eyes, and I'm playing, and I saw her, and I kept locked in on her. And then mm-hmm. when we took a break, she was gone. Mm-hmm. I didn't see her for a long time. Then one day we were riding the subway. That's mm-hmm. why I knew it was meant. So I see her on the subway. And I said, oh, that's that girl. It's like, get off the subway. And I'm following her. And she goes on 57th Street. She used to go to an acting class, you know, theater. And I just say, oh, I got to meet this girl. Then I didn't go all the way. So one day we were up, and I was in Harlem going to a chicken place where you eat chicken. And there she was. So she was trying to get me to come to her play. And I'm shaking, nervous. And I said, oh, how could I don't want to blow this. And I said, oh, hi. And we start talking. So that was a good thing. And I didn't say too much because I didn't want to blow the attraction, whatever what you mm-hmm. might want to call it. So we talked and we talked. And then I didn't see her for a while. Then another time I saw her.
So you didn't have, like, contact information or anything?
No. I said, I'll see her on the block. Yeah. So we would see each other. And it kind of was attractive. You know, something was going on. And she would say, well, I thought she was too young for me. One day she pulls out. See, I'm 20. She was 18 or 19. She said something. See, my driver's license, I'm this age. I said, okay. My heart goes, boom, 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 boom. Bumps it out of my chest. And then another thing happened was, let me get this right. I would look out my window. I lived on Broadway. And I could look out and see everybody walking. So I would see her walking down. I would run out of my apartment, run down the street, and get on the phone and pretend I'm talking on the phone. Uh-huh. Then I would say, hey, hi, 1 minute, I'll talk to you. Hang up. Lying.
This would be a payphone on the corner this time, right?
Mm-hmm. I would run to the payphone and hold up the thing. I said, oh, hi. She said, oh, hi. Then I found she worked at a McDonald's, and I used to go there because she was there and get a coffee mm-hmm. and watch it. She would see me. She would always serve me, so it was uh-huh. kind of thing. So I asked her to come out, to come and have eat out with me, some Chinese food, but she didn't show up. She came late, she said, because she said she was a little nervous and scared because uh-huh. she never did anything like that. Uh-huh. But anyway, on and on and went on. And then one time I was in the studio and they needed a singer. So this guy said, we needed somebody to sing these songs. They were paying us the rates of music, me and my brothers. And what happened was I called Sylvia, but somehow she didn't show up. She got lost. So I said, dog, you know, we were just friends, but it was uh-huh. love, you know. Uh-huh. And it wasn't like that kind of lush love. It was like, okay, I like this lady. I have to be careful how you, because you know, I worked at a college, at City College, and it was 10,000 girls there, you know. It was mm-hmm. like, hey, I talked to everybody. It was mm-hmm. very well known and liked around there. So, anyway, I didn't want to treat her like just be, oh, come here, baby. You know, I had to be careful. Uh-huh. But we dated for 4 years before I ever kissed her. Uh-huh. So, that's how we got to be. And then we lived together. I had a little, my band, the group I was in, we got an apartment so we could practice in a basement. And somehow I said, I'm going to go move in the basement and clean it up. And she was there. She said, I'll help you. So she came and we fixed the basement. So we decided that we were going to live together. So we mm-hmm. lived together. Mm-hmm. But then we lived there for a while and, you know. And then we decided, I think in the 80s, I used to work for an advertising agency. Matter of fact, Sylvia got me a job there. It was mm-hmm. called Ashley Dodd. And we lived there. The job place closed down. They used to make $17 million a year. It was a great job. And when it closed, I was kind of heartbroken because I got to be so close with the owners and the people. Everybody was sad because it went down. So we decided to move somewhere. I had just got a job at Columbia University to be security there. And I said, well, I don't know if I want to do that anymore. Because I did it for 10 years before at the college. Got uh-huh. tired of it. Uh-huh. I didn't want to be in the same, you know. But anyway, so we decided to, my mother said, why don't you go up and check out Massachusetts? So we did. I did. They came up and I liked it.
Who was your older brother that was here?
His name is Benny.
Bucket Benny?
Yeah, Bucket uh-huh. Benny. You know him?
Yeah. I mean, not personally really, but.
Yeah. But anyway, he was here. And I came here. And they lived in certain places. I didn't like the feel of the place they lived in. I don't want to say his name. But I didn't like the feel the way. I said, no, I can't. I have to, if I live here, I have to live in my own place and have my own thing. Mm-hmm. So I went to the East Hampton and I got a room. It was a guy, a very nice man named Gary Wharton. And he had some rooms. And I said, I'll paint your building if you give me a room. So he gave me a room. He let me paint the building. I had a room there. So I stayed there, got a job at National Felt, mm-hmm. working at the felt company. And that was cool. And we lived in East Hampton. East Hampton closed down at 6 o'clock in the daytime. The part we lived in, it was quiet. Mm-hmm. So we went fishing a lot. You know, everybody, we fish. And next thing you know, I got a job at the state hospital. Mm-hmm. And then we got an apartment, and we, you know, things was pretty good.
Mm-hmm. What was it like when you first moved from Harlem to East Hampton? Like, culture shock or those kinds of adjustments?
Well, I was used to being around multicultural people anyway. But it wasn't from Harlem today. It was people were just different. But they were nice. Then you had some smart addicts. Oh, yo, man, what's happening? You know, I'd say, hey, uh-huh. we don't act like that, brother. Uh-huh. We're not like that. Wasn't nothing. I just uh-huh. dealt with it, you know. I lived in a building that was mostly, you know, only a few black people in that town at the mm-hmm. time. And the building, people were nice, they were okay, but I stood my ground. I didn't, you know, it wasn't any really. Dwayne lived in the building, and we called him. And I'll tell you, I don't want to record that.
Here, okay.
Then one time we all went to New York in a car, mm-hmm. and this guy, Dwayne, and brother and Doc decided to go off with some girl in Harlem. We couldn't find him. We went all the way back to East Hampton, and we had to drive back to New York to go pick him up. Because he said he saw the railroad tracks, so he started walking on the tracks. So he walked up to Yonkers, uh-huh. New York, on the tracks. So he said, well, this track will lead me all the way back to Northampton. So what happened was, and then he called us and said, I'm still in New York. You guys left me. But he ran and went with some girl, you know. So it was raining that night. Dwayne was driving. Pouring down rain. I'm scared. Oh, God, don't let us get killed. This guy's driving. We got there and got the guy and brought him back. Uh-huh. But it was a wild time. It was really wild.
You've been listening to an interview with Jerry Johnson of Northampton. This is Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJLP, Northampton, 103.3 FM, streaming online at valleyfreeradio.org. You can also hear archived editions of Out There if you go to the website weatherbeard.com/Ruthie, R-U-T-H-Y. And so Jerry and Sylvia's band is called Sylvia Johnson and Higher Help. And this is Dig It. I'll play a few more of their songs later on in the interview. Also, they're playing at Sakura on King Street on Saturday, February 14th. That's next Saturday, as part of a fundraiser for Cross the Waters Cultural Exchange Institute. And that's next Saturday, the 14th at 7 p.m.
coming here with the culture shock, it wasn't really too much of a shock. It was just different. Mm-hmm. It was slow. It was good, though. You know, it was country. It's just what I wanted. I could go fishing every day. I could walk out where I lived in East Hampton, go fishing, go walk in the woods, me and Sylvia. And matter of fact, we got married in East Hampton, you know. And so it was good. It was quiet. It wasn't that many people coming around. It was just, we lived quietly. And then we moved out of East Hampton. We moved to Maple Avenue downtown into an apartment. We were working at the state hospital, both of us. We lived there for a while. Then we got another place in Meadowbrook Apartments. We lived there for 13 years. And then somehow I said, when I leave out of Meadowbrook, I'm going to move into a house. Somehow it happened. It happened. I moved to here. And the funny thing, I had this vision. I was in a car with one of my friends. We were driving through this neighborhood. And I got this big, overwhelming feeling that I'm going to be living in this neighborhood. You know how you get this feeling about things? Everybody do. I kept saying to myself, I feel like I live around here. And then one day, somebody called me and said, Mr. Johnson, I said, look, I don't want no credit cards. I don't want anything. Whoever you are, don't come. He said, no, no. This is about your house, your habitat. I said, what? He said, you got the house. I said, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry talking like that to you. Here, talk to my wife. Uh-huh. So he talked to Sylvia. Sylvia, oh, she jumped with joy. Uh-huh. So they said, you guys can go over and see it. So we come over here. We had to work in here a little bit. Uh-huh. Still working on it. But that's a good thing. And it was the same area that I had this feeling. It was here. Uh-huh. Because this was a vacant lot. For many years, everybody in the neighborhood, this house, is, they say it's famous because it was in the newspaper. They moved it from down there all the way here. Huh. Uh-huh. It was moved from one place to another. I have the pictures and everything. So we've been here for 13 years, and I like it. I love it. My grandkids are going to have it. I'm going to make sure they have it. Mm-hmm. My daughter, if something happened to me, it goes to her. But we're going to keep it as a family thing forever.
Uh-huh. So when you first moved to East Hampton, how did you, like you were playing music lots in New York before you moved, right?
Yeah.
And then, like, how did you continue the music?
Well, we kind of, like, slowed down because we were starting all over. I still had my guitars and amp, and I just played. I said, well, when I stop working at the state hospital, that's when I'm going to go. So when I stop working at the state hospital, that's when I start playing more music. Mm-hmm. People say life is not fair, but it is. You know, they say, I don't know what, life is not fair. Mm-hmm. Do you understand that?
I mean, people are given different opportunities.
Well, I believe in, if you want something bad enough, I don't care how, you know, you have to have a certain amount of spiritual enlightenment about whatever you want and things. You can't worry about this color, that color. You can't worry about this is in your way. This person caused me to be this way. Or I'm like this because of that. You can't. You have to just think and say, how do I want to live? Do I want to be a better person? Do I want to bring life into the world? Or do I want to just sit down and blame or do nothing? You know what I mean? Some people sit around and complain about things and never do anything to make it better for themselves. But in order, sometimes you have to work hard to get what you want in life. And I think some people give up because they get a certain age and say, oh, I gave that up because I didn't. And you can't give up. Yeah. You always got to strive for something better in life. You always got to leave something for somebody else to follow. You got to leave something where somebody else could say, hey, somebody cut a trail for us here. We could follow this. And then you can break out on your own. You can learn something from anybody in life. I don't care what. When I was a kid, I had a habit talking to bums. But I was a shoeshine boy. And a bum told me, I said, what do you do when it gets real cold? He said, well, Jerry, will you buy me a cup of coffee? I said, sure, I'll buy him a cup of coffee. He said, I'll take a brick and go to the biggest one to break it. They put me in jail for 6 months. I get 3 square meals a day. And when the winter, springtime come out, they let me out. Mm-hmm. That's what he said. Yeah. He said he was a lawyer. He was all this and that. He said he just got tired of it. So you can learn something from everybody in life. You know, being when I was a kid, I told a lie. I was supposed to be a certain age, and I was 11 years old. I worked, got a job at the Museum of Natural History. And I met an old Italian man. He said to me, you want a job here? I said, yeah. He said, don't worry. I get you a job here. So he got me a job there. He said, how old are you? I said, 14. You know, I got the job. His name was Chester. But before then, they used to chase me out. Because I used to like to go to the museum and run around. You know how kids play. Yeah. He said, hey, kid. Then one day the guy said, come here, kid. Come here. You want a job here? I said, yeah. Hmm. So the guy got me a job there. He would bring me some Italian food. He was a wonderful man. And if I could find him or know his family, he was old. He's probably dead now. But I owed him a lot of things, you know. I believe I can survive anywhere. Mm-hmm. But I always tell my kids, we might not have electricity for 6 months, 6 weeks. People are so dependent on the supermarket and this luxury and that. But I say, drop the cell phone, turn off the lights, and see how you would survive. Mm-hmm. What would you do? I said, see those little squirrels and birds you see around? You say, oh, that's a cute little animal. I'm not going to eat them. You will be eating them. Mm-hmm. I remember in 1970-something, it was a blackout in New York City of a big snowstorm, something. Trucks could get in there to bring some food. Mm-hmm. So I went to the supermarket, and I see some ladies fighting over milk, a chicken. Because everybody went in and bought up everything, and it was one chicken. Two ladies grabbed their table. I don't mind, just get them. They tore the chicken in half. Mm-hmm. That's funny, but that happened. And what I did with my family, with my friend, I had another girlfriend at the time. We went to the park, Riverside Drive, where the Hudson River is, and we could see all the flashing light, all the darkness, because people don't go to the park. Because they're afraid. You'll be surprised. New York City people are afraid of the dark. But I would say, let's go in the dark. And let's go down to the park. All the criminals are in the city. All the people like myself was out in the park just watching everything.
You've been listening to to an interview with Jerry Johnson on Valley Free Radio. This is Out There. We're going to take a little break and then have about 10 minutes left of the interview with Jerry.
For the best in electro, new wave, funk, and dance, tune into Subculture Friday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Listen from your computer, iPad, or phone by tuning into valleyfreeradio.org. Subculture Friday nights here on WXOJ.
Wednesday nights, you might tune in to the Warm Heart of Africa to hear the funky, sinuous rhythms of Afrobeat. Or the pulse of Algerian rhyme music. Or the desert trance of Tuareg blues. Or township jive from Johannesburg. Or catchy soukous beats from the Congo. Those are just a few examples of what you might hear from 7 to 9 every Wednesday night right here on Valley Free Radio. Join me, your host, DJ Vinyl Scratch, on the Warm Heart of Africa, a celebration of African and Afro-diaspora music, culture, and history, delivered with a groove.
Okay, so here's a song by Sylvia Johnson and Higher Help. This is All We Need.
That was Sylvia Johnson and Higher Help. They have a couple of gigs coming up. They're playing at Sakura Restaurant on King Street in Northampton next Saturday the 14th from 7 to 10. That's a fundraiser for Cross the Water Cultural Exchange Institute. And then they're also playing on February 27th at the American Legion in Granby.
All right, we're going to go back to the interview with Jerry.
You ever heard of Lloyd Price?
Lloyd Price? I don't think so.
Really?
I'm not really. I live most of my life outside, so I don't have a lot of experience with
music or people.
Music, people, movies, TV, things like that.
Reverb Nation, just type in Sylvia Johnson and I help.
Okay,
and it'll take you.
Let me write that down. I do have one more question for you.
Yeah.
Like in light of Ferguson and the Black Lives Matter movements, I was wondering if you could share any of your experience, like being black in Northampton, like how you think your experience might be different than mine, being white, or things that you feel like you have to...
Well, you know, when I first came to this town, I used to walk. I worked at the depot, and in the around 12 o'clock, I got off. But I used to be walking, so I don't know, was it a cop or somebody would follow me every time? So I got sick of it. So when he would follow me, I would walk down the street like this. And then I walk down the street like this. Then I walk the street backwards. Then I still walk like this. And then I go like this. All these things. So the guy would drive by me, keep doing it. And I just did it because I said, why is he following me every night? You don't remember that, right, Tim?
And then when I came, I started doing the same thing.
So, you know, it was just funny. And I say, okay, let him follow me because I had nothing to hide and stuff like that. But being profiled, let's just say some people have had a hard time. Me, if you know what to say, people say stop you, they're not going to too
being
much.
Being profiled is not cool. It's uncomfortable. But it's like, if you didn't do anything wrong.
You got nothing, you're not.
Look at them and say, well, what's the problem, officer? And then they'll tell you what they think. So we're not, you're not here. Everything's cool here. Try over there.
Hey, okay, honey, I love you. I'll see you later. The profile, what happened, I think some people don't know. Cops have an attitude anyway. They have a gun in their hand. They feel like the god. Well, I'm going to tell you, in New York City, I was very upset with a police officer because my little brother ran into a pole. He was in a... Emily and my mother were there, and the cops said, get back. I just, I wanted to take his gun and kill him. Mm-hmm. But I didn't. Emily and I said, wait a minute, brother, let him go. Let that stupid go. But he said this was a top brass officer. And I let it go. But it took a lot for me to forget about it, because I wouldn't be here today.
Yeah.
But I have seen some ugly things. I heard cops tell people, shut the don't say nothing. You know, this is a free country. That's why I think they provoke people into things. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that it's not always their fault, but I think that sometimes they have a little too much authority. Now, like I see the cop tell you, shut up, don't say nothing. If you want to explain yourself, I think you have the right to explain yourself without somebody telling you to shut up. Don't say nothing, but take you to jail. Or say, for instance, if you didn't do anything and they grab you, say, what'd I do? And then you just say, pull back. Your wrist resist. Right. You know, that should be rethought. You know, that is not right. You know, I see cops just come to people's house. Shut up, I know you. I have to tell people that. To kill a man over a 25-cent cigarette, it's wrong. Mm-hmm. Some of these things should just be kind of like they go bust a person with a joint, put him in jail for 5 years. Mm-hmm. Come on, you think that's really worth it? I was in East Hampton, and this guy says to me, they always had this, they always did this. So the cop said to me, look, we don't need no help, but go tell your homies, your cronies, that we're not racist or anything. I looked at him and I said, what do you mean you're not racist? So I had my bike, my keys, and he said, where you get this bike from? What are you doing with car keys? And I said, this is my key, and that's my effing I didn't curse. I said, but this is my bite. And they said, okay, this guy's okay. Let him go. He's, but it was one little cop almost ran me over by his attitude. Some of them have the training to deal with other people, and they just have the wrong attitude how they approach people. Because have you ever noticed when it was a crime or a drug bust, they always show black people? Mm-hmm. What does that do? You always see this. Until the majority of people are going to say, oh, it's always black people doing that. And then, in fact, it's everybody doing it. Mm-hmm. Black, white, Puerto Rican, Chinese, everybody is doing all these things. You know, what's that lady name? She's an actor, Jodie Foster. She was caught in Boston Airport with an ounce of cocaine. Mm-hmm. An ounce. They let her go. But if it was a black person, I remember the lady that played If You Holler, Let It Go, Barbara McNair. They put her in jail. They ruined her career because she had a little, not even as much, but they put her in jail. Mm-hmm. Just like on Ferguson, that guy in Staten Island.
Mm-hmm. Eric Garner.
And they choked that guy to death. You could see that on play. He had an illegal hold, they said. Mm-hmm. But they had to steal, he got away with it.
So, you know, you see these things happen, and how do you not let rage eat you up?
Well, how you not? Because have a sound thinking mind. You say, well, that's, you know, if I let it go like that, people are going to get, you know, rage do bother me. But I find there's another way to fight this situation. The way they've been doing things, you shoot some black kid, and then just chalk it up and say, oh, well, he was a bad kid. The smear campaign. Well, he used to smoke marijuana. He was drinking beer. He was this and that. So what? You still can't kill a person because they smoked a joint. And in New York City, they had found a precinct where I lived. The cops were selling drugs and everything else. But nobody never said anything that the parents of those kids was on drugs in that area should have sued the city. Because those cops were selling the drugs. Mm-hmm. They got rid of the cops, they went to jail, but nobody said anything about that. When it comes to racism, you know, these cops are sometimes they profile people, but thank God I didn't have too many problems with the law in New York City or anything. I never really have, because when they ever would ask me something, I stood up and I just said, yo, man, what don't you do? I knew what to say. Yes, sir, officer, what do you want? What's wrong? But I lived in a neighborhood when I was a kid. There was a lot of drug addicts, and I had a guitar. What type of cop could drive it up? And he'd say, hey, come here. Where you get that guitar from? I say, it's mine. He said, well, can you play it? You better know how to play it. I took it out of the plate. He said, oh, okay. Sorry, man. So, and they knew me and my brothers for playing at a block party. So, well, that's a musician. They never bothered us too much. But I'd seen them do beat the shit out of somebody, told somebody they were going to kill them. Mm-hmm. But there are some good cops and there are bad. And sometimes the one bad cop make them all look bad. Yeah. When the Ku Klux Klan was throwing bombs at my grandmother's church, you know, when it comes to terrorism and racist things, we felt it before, everybody, but nobody said anything about it. You know what I mean? It wasn't a big thing. Oh, no, they don't know. They don't let people. Yeah. They didn't want to let some people vote.
Yeah. Like, why is lynching not considered terrorism?
It is a terrorism.
It totally is.
You know, that racist stuff is, I could talk more and more about that, but I have seen it. I wanted to tell you another thing. I had a relative hug in Louisiana. Before I was born, or when I was born, he was dating a white girl, and they caught them together, and she said, oh, you know, rape, you know. So they killed him, you know. And when I was a kid, I used to see the cops come with a machine gun. For guys gambling, they bring a machine gun and 20 cops, a dog, ready to take you to jail for something that this small. And when something used to happen in Louisiana and in the South, there are a lot of people are missing. When something happened, they said it was this person, they go and kill them. The Klan was terrible in those days, in the 1950s. They were just terrible. I remember me being a little kid, and I see this guy, a sheriff, big old hat, fat guy, red car like this with a star in it. And people would run in the house in Louisiana. They would run when they see the sheriff. He says to my mother, what you looking at? My mother say, nothing. Which means he turned a straight color to Joe.
So that's been an interview with Jerry Johnson. He's part of the band Sylvia Johnson and Higher Help. That's the background music is them. I've just been joined in the studio by Dwayne Rainey, who made the trek up here to Florence.
A.K.A. Mushroom.
No, that's what Jerry said. He didn't say that on the air.
Okay.
You just outed yourself.
Oops. Well, so we have a poetry and song about the climate crisis tonight, Wednesday, February 4th, from 7 to 9 at Northampton Friends Meeting House on 43 Center Street. Performers include Don Ogden, D.O.
D.O. is also host of the Enviro Show here on Valley Free Radio.
Uh-huh. Ben Grosskopf, Tom Nielsen, and Lynn Waldron, a community gathering to take heart and inspire action and resilience in response to the worsening climate change. Snow date, February 5th.
Thanks, Dwayne. Another announcement. This is kind of short notice because this one starts at 5:30, but maybe if you get reception in Holyoke, this is an event in Holyoke at the White Rose Bookstore, 284 High Street, Holyoke. But tonight, Ferguson and Us, Education in Action for Social Justice, a talk and conversation with Holyoke resident, writer, and Hampshire College professor Chris Tinson about Pound Black Lives Matter. I guess that's how you read that, but you know, that Twitter kind of thing. Okay, about Black Lives Matter and Ferguson's importance to Holyoke. That's this evening from 5:30 to 6:30 at the White Rose Bookstore in Holyoke. What next? Oh, I know what's next. So I have another clip I'd like to play. I was going up the bike path the other day and ran into someone who was shoveling the path. Here's a conversation with Caleb, but I got to figure out how to turn off the other thing first.
Do, 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 do.
All right, success. All right, this is a conversation with Caleb.
Hey, Caleb.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Yeah.
You're in a little snow squad action?
Yeah. Good to get up. Have the day off. I'm trying to get some of the accumulations at the intersections, but some of them you scrape down beyond the slushy stuff and it's ice underneath. I've cleared every intersection from North Maple to here so far.
Oh, cool.
I figure I'll go as far as I can.
Yeah, well, thanks for doing it.
How's the riding today?
It's okay. Most of the time you have a tire track
for
the bike, but pulling the trailer, both trailer wheels are usually, either one or both, are in the smushed snow on either side, so dragging the wheels through that is a bit of a challenge. What motivated you to come out here today?
Well, it's nice having the trails cleared by the city. That makes a big difference. But getting to the intersections when you're riding, especially the first few days after the storm, can be really tough getting through on a bike, especially when you're carrying some kind of cargo.
What kind of cargo do you carry sometimes?
Well, I'll carry anything from children to trash and recycling to pastries, anything else that I might be carrying on my daily errands.
Uh-huh. Want to mention Sweet Spoken?
Sweet Spoken is our bicycle patisserie.
Your bicycle what?
Patisserie. We make, my wife and I make chocolates and pastries, and we prefer to get around by bicycle.
Hey, Jim.
Rufy, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Good. Hi, how you doing?
Jim, do you know Caleb? So do you want to say anything more about Sweet Spoken?
We started the business in the summer of 2014. We have a cargo bike that we carry most of our baked goods and chocolates around in.
It's like a trike with a box in the front?
It is, yeah. It is a Dutch-style cargo bike, and it's, you can carry anything in it. There's a bench in it for kids to sit in, but I built an insert that basically turns it into a platform that we can carry our goods and then sell them from. So, like, we were at Florence Night Out back at the end of the summer, and we'll be there again in the spring. And we've done some events at Eastworks and down in East Hampton and various stuff around town here. We use local ingredients whenever we can. We using a lot of organic ingredients, and we try to feature some of the local producers, anything from truffles to macaroons.
Mm-hmm. Are you at the farmers market on Saturdays?
Yeah, we're at the winter farmers market through April. Yeah, that's every Saturday, 9 to 2.
At Smith Vocational?
At Smith Vocational High School.
Do you sell stuff online, too? Is there a website
we
where
do.
People can
yeah,
contact
yeah.
you?
We have an Etsy shop. We have a selection of our goods that are seasonally themed. We're coming up on Valentine's Day, so we have some special Valentine's Day chocolates and stuff. And people can also place custom orders there. So we'll ship by mail, but also if it's around town, people can arrange to have it delivered by bike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have some delivered by bike. It was pretty neat to have Emily ride up on the cargo trike in the backyard.
It is fun. We've had a lot of great feedback from people, a lot of great reactions. And sometimes when we're set up at the farmer's market or anywhere else, people see the bicycle on our logo and they say, oh, what's the connection with a bike? And we say, well, it's on a bike. And they look down and they see the wheels and they don't even realize at first that they're buying something from a bicycle.
Well, thanks for shoveling.
All right.
That was Caleb clearing the crossings, the rail trail and street crossings last week with the shovel. Something I wanted to announce. So my housemate Alex has this whole bike path phone system that he's made up. 825-6795 is a number. You can do lots of convenient things with this phone system, like check the weather or set up a voicemail box for yourself or listen to the monkeys, 413-825-6795. And one of the things I did is, so if you want to submit something to Out There, like the submit, like your, the sound, just like a song or a conversation, whatever, you can leave me a message on that extension 0301. It could be about a class at school, something that, you know, happened at the VA, or project at Meadowbrook, an act of kindness on the rail trail, observations of nature, a struggle you're having, a request for neighbors, a conversation between friends, or a gratitude, or a song, or who knows what. And submissions that shed light on how we can build a more peaceful, enjoyable, and just community are particularly welcome. And I think I'm looking for submissions anywhere from 15 seconds to 6 minutes long. And you can make it anonymous, or you can leave your name, contact information if you want, either way. Again, the number is 413-825-6795, extension 301. Or you can just go to the bike path phone, which is on the bike path between Straw Ave and Chestnut.
What a concept.
And just go underneath the white pine tree there and pick up the receiver and dial 0301. I had a submission this week. The first one came in, and I'm trying to play it, but I have to figure out the tech part of it. So hopefully next week I'll be able to play that one and maybe any others. So Democracy Now! Is coming up at 5 o'clock. You've been listening to Out There. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Dwayne Rainey is also here in the studio with me.
In person.
So, all right. So, Northampton now has Amtrak train service and improved rails, and the trains are going by faster, and they fenced off one of the main crossings behind Taco Bell. But I have noticed that behind Walgreens, cutting along the south side of Walgreens, there's a sidewalk that will eventually be a connection from the rail trail that comes north from downtown. But that sidewalk that goes around Walgreens and heads straight towards the railroad tracks, Walgreens has been doing an excellent job of keeping that plowed. And I will say there's actually a way to cross the tracks there. And so I have a song for that.
Better stop, look, and listen. If you want to live, you better stop, look, and listen. If you want to live, you better stop, look, and listen for that train. Don't you rush and don't complain. Don't you try to beat that big old train. Do you see that railroad crossing? What's it mean to you?
Do you see that railroad crossing sign? What's it mean to you? We don't want to be another casualty, because you're in a big hurry. Don't you try to beat that big old train. You gotta stop, look and listen and learn. You see those red lights flashing, what's it mean to you? When you see those gates are down, don't you go around. You don't want to be another casualty, because you're in a big hurry. Don't you try to beat that big old train. You gotta stop, look and listen. Then somebody's hit by a train. Don't you be the next one who didn't use their brain. If you're in the way, the train won't stop to let you by. And if you're in the way, you can kiss your life goodbye. Better stop, look and listen, if you want to live. You better stop, look and listen, if you want to live. You better stop, look and listen for that train. Don't you rush and don't complain. Don't you try to beat that big old train. You gotta stop, look and listen and live. You got to stop, look and listen. Use your eyes and your ears and stay alive. You gotta stop, look and listen.
That's Ray Tutash Jr. Stop, look and listen. And there's a pretty awesome video on YouTube that shows what can happen if you don't see the train coming through.